Hip-hop is the street culture of Black and Puerto Rican youth in New York, which has grown to involve people of all different ages and backgrounds. The name hip-hop encompasses three dynamic and artistically innovative forms, subway graffiti, breakdancing, and rap music. At present, graffiti writing is particularly relevant for discussion because of its continual challenge as an illicit and oppositional movement. We can discuss breakdancing and rap music as well after the presentation. While the commercialization of breakdancing and rap music has made these forms more acceptable, graffiti writing still remains an illegal activity. The recent popularity of a stylized post-graffiti art movement has only diverted attention from ongoing official opposition of subway graffiti. The oppositional character of graffiti writing extends beyond its defiance of official public legality, as it also questions dominant interpretations of art as an individual expression. Instead of limiting creative work to art schools, galleries, or museums, or any other designated areas, graffiti exposes artistic expression to broad public scrutiny and provides numerous alternative spaces for its execution. For example, the subway cars. The origins of subway graffiti date back to the 50s and 60s, when Black and Puerto Rican teenagers established a tradition of intricate wall graffiti in the ghettos of New York. In the 50s, street graffiti were widely used to proclaim its gang's hold on its territory or to intimidate rival gangs. During the 60s, wall graffiti became a communications network with its own aesthetic standards. Wall and subway graffiti of the New York style, unlike other graffiti, for example, bathroom graffiti, served not merely to label, but to reveal and even to proclaim the author's identity and ideas. The transition from wall to subway graffiti in New York began by most accounts in the late 60s with Tacky 183. He lived on 183rd Street in Manhattan, and he worked as a messenger. He traveled by subway and wrote his name everywhere, including in the train stations and in the subway cars. After Tacky 183 was interviewed by a New York Times reporter in 1971, a growing movement emerged among the city's teenagers. The most salient innovation of subway graffiti is the use of spray paint as an artistic medium. Traditional wall graffiti were done with markers, and the changes in style brought about by subway graffiti require more and better and more expensive materials for writing. Another new element of subway writing is the increased circulation of the graffiti images and messages. While the graffiti style of the 50s and 60s did not travel outside the city's ghettos, thus remaining invisible to many, subway graffiti has added dimensions of color and movement to a traditional quest for self-affirmation. Graffiti writers' major concern is getting up, that is, to get the name out, to get recognition and acceptance by the peers, from the peers and others. However, over the course of the years, style has become increasingly important. Style is the form and shape of the letters and how they connect. It refers to color, movement, and direction. There are also more general categories of style based on geographical references. Graffiti writers speak of the Brooklyn style or the Manhattan style. The success of the writers depends on the frequency with which they write and their technical or artistic innovations. Style is closely related to form in graffiti. Forms refer to the way letters are built to add up to a name, a word, or a message. Style appears in combinations of seven basic forms: tags, throw-ups, pieces, short for masterpieces, end-to-ends, top-to-bottoms, whole cars, and whole trains. I'm going to show some slides of these various forms. Most of this, the slides that you're going to see are from a book that I have with me called Subway Art, the book of graffiti, subway graffiti, by Henry Chalfant and Martha Cooper. So many of the slides are from that group.
The ability to create and handle style is highly admired among the graffiti writers. The creation of style is based on aesthetic notions that reflect the writer's preoccupation with beautifying what they consider unattractive. The first slide is the slide of tags. These are tags in the early 70s. Tags are the simplest kind of wall of subway graffiti. They are names that usually identify the writers throughout their careers. As you can notice, there are already names of women there, Eva 62, Barbara 62, and of women writers. This is a throw-up by Quick, done in 1982. The throw-up is another simple form that consists of a short name formed into a single unit. While tags are linear and don't leave markers, throw-ups are round, bubble letters, sprayed with color on the inside. This is another example by Lady Payne, a female writer. Pieces consist of four or more letters representing a name or a word. They are painted beneath the windows and sometimes cover the subway car from end to end. This one is by Lady Hart, another female writer, done in 1980, and this represents her name, and this one is by Singh, done in 1982, representing a word, fame, referring to the recognition that the writers strive for. End-to-ends are names and decorations that extend horizontally from one end of the car to the other. They are usually often the result of collective efforts. This one is by Singh, done in 1982, United Artists. The top to bottom is a name or a decoration that extends the whole height of the car, but not necessarily the whole length. This would be a top to bottom by Mad, done in 1982. The previous one was done by Zephyr. Whole cars are painted from top to bottom and end to end, often including the windows. This whole car by Lee was done in 1979, top to bottom and end to end. Next one is by Demo and Pink. Unfortunately, I don't have one slide, one shot of the tool, but I have to show it in two slides. This was done in 1983 by Demo and Lady Pink. The next one was done by Smiley and Head. This is the old graffiti, old style graffiti, done in 1980. And this one is by Dundee, done in 1980, another whole car. Whole trains are painted by groups of writers from top to bottom and end to end. They are the supreme challenge. The first whole train, by most accounts, was painted in 1976 by Kane, Matt 103, and Flame 1. It was called the Freedom Train. I don't have a slide of it. The train was taken out of service by the MTA before many people could see it. Very rare that you would see a whole train running. So forms have progressively evolved from tags to whole trains, though they are often used simultaneously. The evolution of forms indicates the complexity of graffiti writing. From an individual act of self-expression, tags, writers have turned graffiti into a movement of collective efforts, whole, you know, end-to-ends, whole cars, whole trains. Other variations of style include three-dimensional pieces, such as this one by King II, done in 1976. Also, wild style lettering, which is this example. The top one is Style Wars by Knott, done in 1981. It uses both wild style and straight letters to emphasize the difference of style. To the right, to the left, you have this wild style lettering and then wars on the right, the straight letters. The one below is by Sapp and Case, done in 1982. And also the use of cartoon characters is very, very culture. Cartoon characters are widely used in graffiti writing. Messages are also important elements of subway graffiti. They range from writers' comments on their own cases to more personal and political themes, including those particularly expressive of young women's experience. Writers explain their work. Sorry about the truth, they apologize for the work. They explain cheap pain, they explain why it's not okay. Mm-hmm. Too fucking dark in them tunnels, fucked up, my hands were cold, too late, too tired, and so on. Dedications are common in subway graffiti. This one is from Lee to his mother. Dedications are used for birthdays or anniversaries, any occasion. More political themes, messages, include statements like this one, we are unstoppable, uncatchable, we are nasty. It's obviously directed to the authorities. And this, as this one is also to the boys in blue, catch me if you can. The next one is by Lee, done in 1978. Stop real crime, referring to the repression of the authorities in graffiti writing. And these are several messages. Dumb Koch, that one was done by Spin in 1982. To the right of that one, Stop, Look and Listen by Spin. Say, Stop, Look and Listen, we are the sons of the ghetto and we will survive. In the middle, we have Stop the Bomb by Lee, done in 1979, referring to nuclear destruction. To the left, the top, that's a dedication to John Lennon by Lady Pink, one of the female writers. And this last one is by Lee, done in 1980. There was once a time when Lexington was a beautiful line when children of the ghetto expressed with art, not with crime. But then, as evolution passed, the transit's buffing did its blast. Buffing refers to the chemical wash of the subway trains when they wash the graffiti. And now the trains look like rusted trash. Now we wonder if graffiti will ever last. That was done in 1980. This one is the wall piece by Lady Pink, one of the female writers. This graffiti piece by Lady Pink reads, war, crime, corruption, poverty, inflation, pollution, racism, injustice. This is a man's world, with the emphasis on the verb to be, to stress the actuality of his conditions in contrast with those of a hypothetical female world. The majority of graffiti writers are male, and graffiti is generally portrayed as an exclusively male activity. While female writers have always existed, their participation has rarely been recognized by the peers, nor until recently by the media.
If you want, we can turn the lights on if you don't mind. The competition that exists among graffiti writers takes on a special character when applied to women. Besides being accused of biting, that means to copy, the style of any number of male writers, the artistic prestige of female writers does not depend on their ability to use or create style, but on their personal, often meaning sexual, reputation. Two of the best known female graffiti writers are Sandra Favara, Lady Pink, and Gloria Williams, Lady Heart. Pink was born in Ecuador in 1965, and she came to the States with her mother at the age of 7. Heart was born in Corona, Queens, and her family came from Alabama more than 20 years ago. Heart strongly disagrees with the predominant accounts claiming that subway graffiti originated out of the desire of writers to become famous. She thinks that graffiti is an artistic outlet and a means to make one's own statements. To Pink, graffiti is a personal challenge. Her involvement was, as she puts it, against the idea that women have no brains, only emotions, that at 3 o'clock in the morning a girl should be sleeping. Fink became known as Coat, her boyfriend who left for the army, before she changed her name to Lady Pink. She explains this change by saying that if someone saw the name Coke on a train or on a wall, it would only represent another boy writing graffiti. So she had to pick up something feminine, like Lady Pink, in order to be noticed. Interestingly, the idea of femininity is here interchangeable with the idea of feminism. The same happens in breakdancing and rap music with the female participants. By asserting their so-called feminine traits, for example, the choice of names like Lady Pink or Lady Heart, women writers seek to controvert the oppressive attitude of their male peers and parents. Nevertheless, fear seems to have kept girls from going to the arts in large numbers. As Pink says, graffiti is a filthy business, and then going through creepy tunnels, in the South Bronx at 3 in the morning. Not very easy. Hart agrees with Pink. She says that it takes nerve to be a graffiti writer. The yards are dark, the trains make noise, even when the train is shut off, it makes noise. So the ever-increasing dangers of subway graffiti have also affected greater female participation. Some subway yards have attack dogs and toll fences with one or two sets of barbed wire. Female writers are often the target of jealous males who seek to discredit them. Hart says that, and I quote, being a girl writer, you have to be brave, because whether or not you're that kind of girl or not, they figure when a girl hangs out with all these boys, it's this kind of girl and that, and it's up to you to handle yourself accordingly when situations like that come up. End quote. Women writers understand that the boys' attacks and the reputations aim at discouraging their participation. In Hart's words, the stories get so outrageous that it makes you laugh. They want the graffiti world for boys only. I think they figure that you say something so bad about us, it's just going to hurt our little feelings, and we're not going to want to be bothered with graffiti. So they're aware that this is done to intimidate them. The subject women graffiti writers choose consciously varies at times from that of the males. Lady Pink paints women. I'm going to show some of the slides. Lady Pink paints women. Women in distress, according to her, are very strong women. Her political works include representations of skulls, burning bodies in El Salvador, war tanks in Nicaragua, and murals of formidable Amazons representing the power of women. This is Lady Pink standing in front of her Amazon mural. This is the top picture of Lady Heart, another subway piece by Lady Heart, done in the early 80s, 81. This is an outline of a piece by Lady Hart on paper. Graffiti writers usually try their outlines on paper before they go into the subway. And this is the piece that was sold before by Lady Hart in 1980. There are differences of style and subject between male and female writers. According to Pink, men have a passion for black. She, Pink, sometimes excludes black altogether and prefers things that are a little softer, more tender, more sensitive. Distinguishing their work from that of their male counterparts, women writers seek to establish definite presence in the world of graffiti in face of a constant denial of this presence by peers and others. With this intention in mind, Pink has often used stencils to paint big lips and roses instead of writing her name on the trains and on the walls. Although to assert the presence of women in cultural production is extremely important, The actual variations of styles chosen by the female writers are often statements about femininity many of us could regard as conservative and even dangerous. To paint big lips and makeup paraphernalia, and so we trains, a statement of female independence in graffiti, are signs of the prevalent confusion between expression and its stereotype. The confusion that conflicts with feminist intentions to counter sexist ideas and women's artistic expression. However, the initiatives of the women in hip-hop cannot be readily dismissed, for they represent valid acts of resistance when considered in the proper context, and especially because they achieve their primary objective, that is, they publicly manifest the presence and active role of women in the production of hip-hop. There is a sense among the more established writers that graffiti is coming to an end. The prospect of fame and commercial gratification brought thousands of would-be writers into graffiti. The original competition of writers for style has turned into competition for money and fame. As Pink says, she argues that toys, that is apprentice writers, have no one to look up and try to learn from. Concerning the future of graffiti, Pink and Hart agree that the major threat to its existence is the lack of respect among the writers themselves, manifested by the crossing out. Crossing out or going over, refers to covering someone else's name with one's own name, has become in recent times a sort of epidemic that troubles serious writers. Pink says that it's not the authorities with their attack dogs and their fences that will kill graffiti, but rather the underground battles due to jealousy by the writers themselves. She says we outnumber the MTA people, but we can't outnumber each other. Pink points out that none of her work is running, that it has been crossed out, and she says that she's the target of a lot of jealousy just because she's a girl. Pink, or in addition to being in addition to everybody's being crossed out, but she's especially crossed out because she's a girl. Pink and Hart have had many ideas about how to decorate the trains. They discussed landscape and flower scenes on the trains, but it became clear that it would be impossible with the increasing crossing out. In my opinion, crossing out, although significant, is only one of the many threats to the existence of subway graffiti, or graffiti writing in general. The sudden interest of the media and the commercial establishment has also contributed to upset the developments of subway graffiti. Contemporary artists have been influenced by the subway style, in some cases as a way of promoting their careers. And I'm going to show some examples of what is taken to be graffiti art. You probably have seen this. This was on February 10th, the front cover of the New York Times Magazine. Jean-Michel Basquiat, he's enjoyed benefits of a graffiti career in art. His post-graffiti paintings now sell for up to $25,000. This is Basquiat in his studio with his post-graffiti paintings. This is again Basquiat. Subway graffiti also inspired Keith Haring. Yeah, this is the guy. Keith Haring to exhibit his own peculiar style in the subway stations. And thus he has profited from the rising popularity of subway writing. This is his particular style. Keep hearing again in his studio. It's interesting that these two people, Basquiat and Keith Haring, have become the best known graffitist, even though neither could be considered a subway writer. And their style is definitely different from what we saw before of subway graffiti. In addition to raising relatively unknown artists to fame, the graffiti style has drawn the interest of professionals. choreographers widely use graffiti motifs in the work, Twyla Tharp among others. The use of graffiti in commercial advertisement intensifies the ongoing distortion of subway riding. The graffiti style has become, oh, this is another graffitist, Kenny Scharf, in his studio also. It's also become very popular. Now, the graffiti style has become a promotional item for clothing and other commercial objects. Here we see a bathing suit in the graffiti style, as they understand it in commercial terms. And this is another bathing suit. Graffiti-like prints are going to be very popular this summer, according to the New York Times. This is another graffiti. This is the pure silk graffiti print jacket, $295. So you can see, it's, if anything, the style of the graffiti on the jacket would be closer to Keith Haring's style than to subway graffiti. This is a painting, a post-graffiti painting by Lady Pink. Of course, the commercialization of graffiti has affected the original writers as well. So we have the original writers also painting post-graffiti. This is Lady Pink again. Okay. Turn the lights off. In spite of the serious problems graffiti writing faces today, many writers are optimistic about the future of graffiti. Lady Pink, Lady Hart, believes that, and I quote, "Graffiti is going to be around. It will never disappear. The little kids will keep trying." She says that writers know too many secrets about the yards. They know how to avoid the dogs, the workers, the floodlights. There is practical reasoning behind Hart's optimism. She believes that writers will continue to try because their talent hasn't reached the ability where they can go on canvases right now. So they try, the best place to practice is on the trains, where you see it running, and other people see it too, and they'll tell you how it looked. I agree with Hart's optimism. In recent years, inscriptions in the style characterized by subway graffiti have come to appear profusely in a wide range of public spaces, especially handball courts, blank walls in parks and buildings, and in monuments. If you look, if you go to the Grant's tomb, to the Grant's National Memorial, you'll see already, you know, tags, not only tags, but throw-ups and even pieces on monuments, on that monument. And throughout the city you can find Riverside Park walls are where for a while. Now they've been erased, but 2 weeks ago only they were full, the walls were full of graffiti pieces. The General Grant's tomb. The hip-hop forms will vanish neither because of political repression, as in the case of graffiti, nor because of commercial distortion, as in the case of breakdancing, rap music, or even graffiti in its post-graffiti version. Even when they no longer enjoy the present popularity, they will remain a historical challenge to official public legality and to elitist notions of art. Thank you.
Right. But it still seems that there's some sort of, there's some relationship between the marketplace and the graffiti already, even before the graffiti gets co-opted. So in a way, it's kind of tricky to talk about graffiti trying to defend itself, to defend its purity against the marketplace, because then you end up with kind of an elitist idea of graffiti as though it's just this pure aesthetic form. I mean, so it's a tricky kind of oppositional.
Well, I don't think they're trying to defend graffiti, but actually the writers want to defend, they want to recognition.
Right, no, I was talking about your analysis, not the writers.
Oh,
I mean, is that when you're writing, you know, what stance do you take? Since as a scholar, you're going to be, what you're doing really is educating people who wouldn't go out there to were educating them about this.
Mm-hmm. And you think that the top team that we had had a before the commercial establishment to
you say cooptation, it becomes something bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that there was always bad, but that there's a very close relationship between the graffiti and, I don't know if you want to call it the marketplace or the opposition community. But in a way, they needed that impetus from the New York Times article.
I don't think that coverage by the opponent necessarily stands to the one thing is publicity, the other thing is commercial use. And I think those two things are really different. Separate. Commercialization is something whereby it's being used to make money, whether by advertising or by use of fashion or by taking some.
Well, actually, I have to say, for those, pictures,
that you can look at if you want to. But to answer your question, more nice pictures than many of them taken by another child. And what happens is that, as I was talking about, any problems with the writer, very dangerous to the baby. I mean, if they see you in the subway painting something, they're going to arrest you. Simple as that. Okay? So the easiest kind of graffiti to do fast, quick, and nobody's going to look at you or nobody's going to see you, you know, is the tags, what you're talking about, the name, the scene, the tags. Okay? Also, the official repression of subway graffiti is very intense, and as soon as the car, you know, the subway car is painted, they usually, well, first of all, grossed out by other subway riders, but also washed by the transit authorities. So you know, you never really get to see, very difficult to see a whole car nicely, visibly painted. Usually they take them out of service and they wash them, and then they throw back the car that is already rusted from the washing, and they really can't wash in the car, so which ruins, it doesn't ruin the ship, it ruins the paint of the subway train. So it's
so this is history.
Yeah, this is
these are not
history.
Yeah.
Still doing them, but other than that book. Art that artists know already that he's something kind of
bad. And why don't they do it with all the others? Or are they just, I mean,
there's so many toys tagging with Margaret on the train, and the fact that Margaret leaves you and it's put on. So if you put a spray paint mural on one of those white trains that's still with that marker, all the Margaret will bleed through. So the writers who are doing murals are supported by writers who are, they're calling them animals. But, so what you have to do is prepare the surface. Now you have to put on a preparation primer. Or take your own stuff and put it off the thing so you do it. That's a difficult
job.
It takes a lot more time. And jars are good.
I don't know if this is a valid comparison, but when the destruction of these murals, I really am reminded of when Rockefeller destroyed the Cooper murals because he didn't like them. You know, it's sort of that your musings are so beautiful, and to think that you really work on something that you think is beautiful, and for a fleeting moment people enjoy it, and then because of whether it's the mayor or the transit authority. So I wanted to ask two questions which you and I have talked about that I'd like you to ask. Is the question of what is the relationship of graffiti painting the role of white, because you mentioned that there is one white graffiti painting is known to cross out other people's writings. And also, do you find do the women believe that their feelings are crossed out more than men? You know, is it that conscious and that deliberate? Is that true?
It's hard to say if it's true or not, but according to Lady Payne, you know, spoken to a lot, she says that, yes, it is true that because she is a woman, she gets first out more, she gets more jealousy than a male writer. And she's also well known to the writer, so she gets even more jealousy. The other question was about, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's documentary called Child Work. It explains all the styles that you're supposed to be analyzed and supposed to write it. And when it comes to crossing out, in that documentary, maybe Henry can talk about it more than one of the participants in the documentary. Pat, who is a well-known cross-out writer, and his wife. And if I recall, in the documentary, he's supposedly being racially motivated in his cross-out.
of black
There are a few gray areas with that, but by and large, he is motivated by racism. He does, however, he hates white writers who have written black and black writers.
You know, one thing that struck me about the slide of the fashion, I haven't seen very many fashions with men wearing bikini kind of clothes, and I just wonder if it sort of, you know, sort of women are also things that can be just, you know, written on and painted on, and so now we can wear graffiti, which might, I don't know, subconscious, whatever word one wants to use, we also exist for people to sort of tag, but what matters.
You know, the whole territorial thing about graffiti. You put a tag on something, you own it. You know, the writers refer to themselves as king of different types of territory. I'm king of the mailbox, or I'm king of the garbage truck, or I'm king of the inside of the train, or king of the outside. So it's a territorial thing, so it's kind of a and you didn't see the graffiti on the cover, but on the side.
That's what I was noticing. I say, now, who owns that woman in her $280 first door silk dress?
But there's also this really perverse relationship between the designer signature that's been popular. You know, everyone's been wearing these designer signatures for the last 10 years, and now
there are a number of exhibitions we should mention. If people are interested, if you ever drive up the east side, I just pointed out to Nancy and to Juan as we drove up, you should have named the painter.
There is a wall by Keith Harry. It's on what street?
From 96 to 125th, isn't it? On the east river drive, from 96 to 125th, you get out from under the tunnel. And I noticed it, and then I noticed that the store in Brooklyn, where we all live, there's a pair of socks being sold with these designs. And we had joked about buying the socks and wearing them to this presentation. And then there's
the at the at Lehman College?
Yeah, at Lehman in Bronx, there was a Sylvia art show also. That's on, well, it's on now. It was due April 21st.
In the college too.
Yes. Lady Pink, she has a vivid in the place called Semaphore, and then her granddad, F-E-M-A-P-H-O-R-E. Semaphore East. It's at 157 Avenue D. Oh yeah, Lady Pink is going to be part, yeah, she's part of the Disney Biennial.
Yeah, they, every 2 years they have a kind of survey of the most important movements and trends in contemporary art. And it's really good that this year we celebrate the repeat artists in that. Become established currently in contemporary art internationally. It's interesting that all those people that are artists that are following are kind of a Indian, two parents also, and I think that they're really sharp, really, and they.
Oh, you were showing this?
Yes.
And when was it stopped, is that any?
I think it's part of it. It's open.
It's open.
It's usually seen as a representation of what they're trying to put the cutting edge.
Mm-hmm. One thing that we really didn't get into very much, I think, is like the class issue of subway art and why there's not more political expression or the use of popular culture imagery. And also, I was thinking about it when she was talking about co-opting, say, to put Keith Haring in the biennial or commercial use of graffiti. Does that, dilute the possible political expression that graffiti could have? I mean, I know it does have some. But,
yeah, it does. I mean, commercialization, you know, it really washes out, you know, and includes the messages. And graffiti is very political, not only to the messages, like the ones that show the community and all these folks, through the messages, but also just by being what it is, you know, to put your expression and public property drawn it as people, you know, that's already a statement in its own right. You don't have to go into the messages of the field. Plus, the growing and constant, the growing of the movement and the actuality of the movement at this point, when there was so much repression, you know, so many dangers involved. Even more than before. So that's a challenge for them to keep doing it in spite of all the dangers and all the problems. So I think it's definitely political, you know, it's on the rise, and its messages are very political too.
Sometimes they are. A lot of times, though, I think that the use of popular culture, say Disney, is not a terrible political act.
Well, to me, graffiti writing and hip hop in general, that's where I call popular culture. That to me is popular culture. Disney and I think of the mass culture. So there's a different variety. But of course, graffiti writers take a lot of motifs and inspiration from, you know, all the sources of cultures, you know, mass culture and different characters. had another character was put on a train, you know. The physical character changes when it's put on the train. And actually, Henry's doing a very interesting work with the characters of graffiti and how he was explaining to me the other night how the style that is used by the graffiti writers to, you know, let's say, one specific example is the kind of sneakers that they paint on the subway, characters. And they have become also the fashion for many of the graffiti of their gangsters. And so there's a relation between what they do and how they modify the characters that they take on the mass media, you know, modify or to suit their own needs and purposes and their own creativity.
On the question of political, because you know, there are many sort of concepts of what is political, how much it is. A sign, a graffiti painting that says "Dump Cop." Some people, that's political. To others, they would say that the actual, whether you draw the smirk, like on one of the paintings, there was the smirk on the entire train. That, in a sense, is political because it's illegal and because of the danger, and also because of the creative perception that people who paint graffiti are somehow creating sort of visual pollution. And you put it, so it's that sort of act, and I think. In one sense, I don't know if you use the word pre-political or sub-political, how much all of it is consciously political is something that we would have to look at. I have one question. I'm curious to know if in the recent Bernard Getz business there's been any graffiti done specifically about that either. It's just in terms of writing slogans or painting, because it just, has anybody seen any or heard of it? I mean, aside from people spray painting Bernard Getz as a racist and that, but I mean, in the style. Is any, have you heard of any of that?
I haven't.
Not yet. I've heard of somebody who wanted to do a whole car on that thing. He didn't do it yet.
Well, what about Michael Stewart, the recent things that have now come out about that?
Well, the thing about Michael Stewart is that he wasn't a graffiti artist. He's been taken by the media and made into a graffiti artist. I guess partly to justify the fact that he's brutally handled by the police, the media, that the Post laid it out to be somebody that we all should hate. And the media that was the case of the
I think it's important to understand it as a movement. That's why people like Keith Haring, Jean-Michel, Michael Stewart, for example, are, although in some way they overlap with it, in one way or another they might overlap with it. It's just at one point in their life they've thrown something onto a public place. They're not part of this movement. They're not integral to a collective. So that's why anything that they do or anything that's said about them, which ties them to them, is going to distort, including the taking of Keith Haring's style and making it into what is symbolic of graffiti style. We've seen how far removed Keith Haring's style is from that typical training and handle of this. So I think that, you know, it's really important to focus it that way, to steals it, and not just consider anybody as a graffiti writer equally the same way, who goes into somewhere and throws something on the wall. It's not that kind of a thing. But I think it's also not political movement. And we have to keep saying, I think it's very accurate about some subtle or pre-political kind of state, and that's what differentiates it from much of the Europe that's going on, which often is connected to a political movement. And explicitly, I know that Chicano movement in LA, for example, is really, they have a lot of stuff about Central America, about Chicano liberation, and all these other things on there, which you don't find at all, okay? You have to say, you don't find that on the subway. That kind of political consciousness is not work. So that I think it's a challenge to us as political people or the rest of people to see cultural politics in that way and not expect it to be the articulated sort of explicit political reference, but to see the act itself, see the cultural expression itself as political in certain contexts. And that's really what's happening here. And so if the political movement doesn't see it that way, it can easily dismiss it. It's just so many vandals or so many people, young kids who just want something better to do, you know, have nothing better to do and all that kind of thing. And that's what's really crippled, I think, in a cultural sense for a long, long time. And we have to sort of remain open to seeing politics as being expressed, not only in the explicit, articulate way, but in the very way that people deal with social reality. And this is a good example. As well as rap and music, are all really good examples of that.
So we have to talk about reggae or rap music. It seems that you just love it.
I'm just not so familiar with this word. What does it mean, rap and music? I just don't understand it.
Break dancing, do you know what this dance is like?
Oh, this, yes, I know. And rapping, what does this
rapping mean? Is this kind of music.
This is the style of music where you talk all the time,
yeah,
and your men talk, and
very
so
fast.
So far.
Yeah.
How much of it is revenge? Is there any kind of, for me, when I first saw it, I was just like, it was an aggression to me, and at the same time I thought, well, it could be better. Why didn't they are made by teenagers? So with that, I got to know that. Is there any better for the teenagers to me?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's basically what it is. It's sort of it's challenging. Not only the authorities, but also challenging the, as I was saying before, the art establishment and everything. Yeah, it is the better.
She made a question about she was a therapist, right?
She used to, yeah, right? Yeah, she does, but yeah, she specifically depends.
Mm-hmm. And didn't there be all the records?
Women?
Yes.
Some of them, mainly late teens and late March. I spend most of my time with them, but I also sell with people. And there are many other late teens and late March that are not really involved in the graffiti movement at this point. These interviews were done last summer. So there are new women coming out and at their age. I haven't gotten to speak to them so many times. But he got a scholarship to go to Philadelphia to do more art. Mm-hmm. And Lady Hart joined the army. So,
she's going to paint tanks, right?
How old is she?
It's very ironic, you know. Lady Pink is 20. But most of the graffiti writers are younger than that, 18, 17 years.
Is there any conflict between the writers and the parents?
Oh, yeah. Especially before the graffiti was popularized, so that maybe some of the kids famous, you know, then the parents would go there. But at the beginning, yeah, so there was a lot of family conflict.
Mm-hmm. scour the film, these films show that really, really well.
Yes.
There are scenes, constantly recurring scenes throughout the movie, mm-hmm. of a mother, a black mother, sort of complaining about all her son and father, the son is getting right behind her. Without even looking at her, answering her, her love and her affection, she really captures her love. Beautiful family struggle.
Sir.
Lord.
Well, this actress or name, king or whatever,
and symbols that express that. There ought to be a crown on top of the bag, expressing the fact that they're king.
What did they get from the moon?
Heart during the moon.
Well, it's hard to, it's the only way out. I mean, it's the way of social mobility, you know? And she was going to school, she was going to for art. And she wasn't painting trains anymore because she was afraid, you know, she said she was too old. Now she gets caught, she will go to jail, no more. So she has stopped painting trains. But she's artistic, she's an artist. So she went to school for art. But I guess it was better for her to go to the army, more security. And
when you say it's too old, meaning that they'll be tried, because they're over 18, they'll be tried in a regular court and sent to jail, supposed to be, quote, juvenile crime, is that it?
She was very excited about joining. She called me specialist to tell me that. Guess what? I have news for you. Great. And she was excited. Well, maybe she got a whole train or something. She was just going, you know? She said, well, I joined the